Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Season 3, Episode 31 of They Walk Among Us, a podcast dedicated to UK true crime. Listener caution is advised, as this episode contains adult themes and descriptions that some listeners may find distressing. After receiving a 999 call in the early hours of Thursday, July 7th, 2016, two police officers from the Avon and Somerset Constabulary arrived at a property on Wells Road in Bristol. The caller confessed that he had killed someone.
Wells Road, what's happening there?
I just killed Camille.
Sorry?
I just killed Anna Camille.
I didn't catch that, sir.
I just killed Anna Camille and it's reversed. I got injured to myself as well.
Right, okay. Right, okay, what's your name?
Jeffrey George Barry.
Okay then, Jeffrey.
He lives in Colorado. He's had two counts of threat to kill. He's done criminal damage.
Though barely audible, the man on the phone said that he had warned the victim. The caller then said he had spoken to a crisis team, but he was ignored.
A crisis team.
You've spoken to the crisis team, okay.
Yeah, and they ignored me.
They ignored you.
Yeah. You're not dead now.
The operator was told the caller sliced his hands. A voice then says, "It's murder, isn't it? I'm going to say diminished responsibility."
Of course it's murder, isn't it?
Right.
I'm going to say diminished responsibility.
Two officers gained access to the shared home, which was being used as a supportive housing unit for adults with mental health issues. Police found the body of 48-year-old Camille Ahmed, who was pronounced dead at the scene. He had been stabbed over 60 times, including 25 significant injuries to his face and eyes, and the lower area of his body had been mutilated. The man responsible, Jeffrey Barry, was shirtless, covered in blood, with deep cuts to his hands. The 56-year-old was taken into custody and was detained at Longlaughton High Security Prison before being transferred to Broadmoor Hospital. Later that month, he appeared before Bristol Magistrates Court, charged with murder. Both the perpetrator and the victim had lived at the 9-bedroom converted Victorian property on Wells Road in Knowle, Bristol. The home was run by the Milestones Trust, a Bristol-based charity that supports people with mental health issues, dementia, or learning disabilities and helps them develop the skills to live independently. Throughout the working week, support workers helped the residents for a few hours a day, though are not present during the evening and weekends. The building is divided into multiple flats and bedsits that share a bathroom and kitchen facilities. Camille Ahmed's room was located on the first floor, and he would need to walk past Jeffrey Barry's room when using the communal facilities or entering and leaving the property. This meant the two would frequently see each other. Born in Iraq during the late 60s, Camille Ahmed grew up in a large family of nine children. During the late 1980s, along with one of his brothers, he had fled to the mountains in the Kurdistan region of Iraq to avoid conscription into Saddam Hussein's army. He was eventually captured by the dictator's police. Camille was imprisoned for 2 years in Abu Ghraib, known for its vile living conditions and frequent executions. He was regularly beaten and made to stand naked outside, exposed to the elements for days at a time. As a result of the torture he suffered, he developed post-traumatic stress disorder and obsessive-compulsive disorder. After his release, he first travelled to Iran and then sought to leave the political unrest in Iraq behind. He arrived in the UK during 2010, hoping to find peace and safety. One of Camille's younger brothers, Kamaran, had already moved to the UK during the early 2000s and settled in Derby. Here is Kamaran speaking about his brother.
He's kind, he's a lovely person. He's trying to build his life, he's trying to learn English and getting a job to live, just normal, like as all other people, to live. He was okay and he was happy and he think he's safe.
Camille first lived in Cardiff but was transferred to Bristol and soon after moved to the supported living flats on Wells Road at the start of 2013. Described as a gentle, kind-hearted and modest man by those that knew him, he studied English and was often seen helping out at the refugee drop-in centre. His limited grasp of English created a number of hurdles. Further difficulties came when filling out government support forms. Camille's application for asylum was considered, but ultimately refused, and he was required to check in every week at the immigration office. It was reported a month before his death, Camille had told his friends that he was no longer due to receive any social support and would shortly become homeless. While fighting for a judicial review, he was facing eviction. Still able to access healthcare, Camille could manage his mental health issues with medication, although could not afford the food he needed to take with it.
I am asking, have you seen anybody to take this kind of medication and to live rough without a good accommodation and healthy food and empty stomach?
He would see a therapist each week and would express himself through writing and painting. Ominously, a few weeks before he died, he painted himself being stabbed. Along with his painting, he wrote an explanation. It read, "My name is Camille Ahmed. I have painted this picture. This is a house, a window. I have always opened this window, looked outside, and shut it again. I shut the window, and now everywhere is closed for me. It looks like I am in one room and can't go out. This is my heart that has been stabbed with a dagger. This is my blood coming down. Someone at the Home Office did to me this. I am bleeding still, and no one can stop it. That is all." Jeffrey Barry had a long history of mental health issues. Born in the early 60s, he was raised with his twin brother in Bristol. Jeffrey fathered a child, but split from his partner during his mid-20s. He would frequently get into trouble with the law turning to drink and drugs as a way to self-medicate his mental health issues. He received numerous criminal convictions throughout his early life and was referred to Bristol Royal Infirmary when he exhibited paranoid symptoms. He believed the mafia was out to get him, and when he could find work, his colleagues made him extremely paranoid. He was then convicted of robbery and spent 15 months in prison. While there, he made complaints about staff, accusing them of thought transference. In 1987, he was again arrested and charged with assault for attacking a nurse at Bristol General Hospital. He received 3 months in prison. The following year, he was sectioned and taken into the care of Rampton Secure Hospital in Nottinghamshire. After he was discharged, he was recalled for breaching his release conditions. Over the course of the next few decades, he spent time in and out of secure mental health facilities. He stayed at Froomside Secure Hospital in Bristol for a time. During a game of Scrabble, he attacked another nurse with a knife, so was sent back to Rampton. More trouble with the law meant a stint at HMP Bristol before he was transferred back to Rampton and then on to Broadmoor. While on clozapine, a medication most commonly used to treat schizophrenia, it was said he was humorous, kind and generous, although off it, he became over-sexualized and highly inappropriate. Initially, he responded well to treatment and was released from his secure accommodation, moving into the flats operated by the Milestones Trust on Wells Road during 2010. The first incident between Kamil Ahmed and Jeffrey Barry occurred on June 23, 2013. Jeffrey Barry had attempted to force his way into Kamil's room uninvited. No support workers were there to witness the event. 4 months later, on October 6th, while in the communal area, Barry punched Kamil repeatedly in the face. The police recorded an instance of racially aggravated common assault, though again, as no support workers witnessed the attack, it was reported that it did not meet the charging threshold. In December 2013, Kamil Ahmed contacted the police when he was again struck in the face by Jeffrey Barry, who had been out drinking. Barry was arrested and detained under the Mental Health Act. The following month, the Milestones Trust approached the courts for an injunction so Jeffrey Barry could not return to the property, but a judge rejected this as Barry did not attend his court appointment. The Milestones Trust issued Jeffrey Barry with a final warning, and if he were to breach his conditions, he would be evicted. Kamil was offered the opportunity to move to another property. However, this was a considerable distance from the support network he had established, so he chose to stay. Over the course of the next few years, Jeffrey Barry made threats to kill Kamil and frequently entered the rooms of female residents uninvited. During April 2016, Kamil attended a local police station with a representative of the Milestones Trust to report that Jeffrey Barry was harassing him. This was recorded as a hate crime. The sequence of events over the next few months remains unclear, as police logs state numerous attempts were made to contact Kamil, but either an interpreter wasn't available, or when appointments were agreed, they were cancelled in error. Either way, on May 19th, the safeguarding referral was closed with the following explanation. Mr. Kamil was not a vulnerable adult. He's in the process of being discharged from social services. He is able to call for police assistance if needed, and did so in this case. As Kamil had been refused asylum, he was no longer eligible for support from the City Council, and he was informed he would no longer be able to stay at the Milestones Trust property on Wells Road, as the charity had received notice that his funding was being withdrawn. Only a few days before the charity was contacted about Kamil, Jeffrey Barry was sectioned again under the Mental Health Act and taken to Callington Road Hospital, a psychiatric facility in Bristol. He had been seen masturbating in public. He was naked, wearing only a policeman's hat and holding a sex toy. Worryingly, while being detained, he referred to 14-year-old girls and paedophilia. Due to a shortage of beds, Barry was transferred from the Callington Road Hospital to the privately owned Signet Hospital, Kewstoke in Weston-super-Mare on June 20th. Barry sought to be released and demanded a hearing in front of an independent mental health tribunal. Geoffrey Barry told doctors that his behaviour was influenced by his excessive alcohol consumption and cannabis intake. Psychiatrists expressed concern. However, the 56-year-old was released upon instruction from the tribunal on the condition he took his medication and promised not to consume drugs or alcohol. He was released less than 12 hours before Camille Ahmed was found dead. The Avon and Somerset police force were not made aware of his release, despite Geoffrey Barry being on bail after making a threat to kill Camille. An out-of-area care manager was meant to visit Barry, however, was on leave. In their absence, a care coordinator should have seen him, although they were not informed and cover was not provided. A pre-trial hearing into the murder of Camille Ahmed didn't take place until over a year after the incident. Although Geoffrey Barry was not present, it was announced that a trial would begin in October 2017 and was expected to last 2 weeks. Junior Defence Counsel for Geoffrey Barry, Tabitha McFarlane, explained that further mental health assessments were being carried out. It was reported that the Bristol Safeguarding Adults Board were looking to launch a review into the death of Camille Ahmed. The trial began at Bristol Crown Court during the start of October. Geoffrey Barry denied that he murdered Camille Ahmed, but admitted to manslaughter on the grounds of diminished responsibility. Barry had been diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic. His defence team of David Jeremy QC, assisted by Tabitha McFarlane, argued that their client was not responsible for his actions due to his mental state at the time. Prosecutor Adam Vitalingam QC told the court Geoffrey Barry had assaulted Camille Ahmed numerous times and been racist towards him. He said the defendant had taken a dislike to Camille Ahmed long before he killed him. 34 notes written by Barry had been pushed under the door of the Milestones Trust office. One read, "I'm extremely depressed. I've suffered a complete nervous breakdown. I'm extremely psychotic." On another he wrote, "Camille is planning to kill me. I've a very high temperature." A month and a half before the killing, Geoffrey Barry had made a call to the police and claimed that Camille Ahmed was a terrorist. He also suggested that Camille was a benefits cheat, paedophile, and rapist. In the past, Geoffrey Barry had spoken of how he wanted to kill people. In May 2015, support workers were told by Barry that he wanted to become notorious. He had created a list of people he wanted to kill, and first on the list was Camille Ahmed. The following day, Geoffrey Barry called the police making accusations about Camille. He told the operator, "He has raped a vulnerable person. He has committed 2 acts of theft and he has broken a television. He is a paedophile and a terrorist in Iraq." The consultant psychiatrist, who was aware that Geoffrey Barry had come off his medication, had seen the defendant 8 times between November 2015 and May 2016. The psychiatrist believed that Barry's uninhibited behaviour could have been attributed to his drug and alcohol consumption. A few minutes before the attack on Camille, Geoffrey Barry had spoken to a community psychiatric nurse over the phone and said he was criminally insane. Geoffrey Barry alleged that the nurse was ignoring his pleas for help, and after getting highly agitated, he terminated the call. The nurse contacted 101, a non-emergency number, to report Barry's behaviour, but this wasn't until nearly 40 minutes later, at 2:07 a.m. Around 1:30 a.m. on July 7th, 2016, armed with a knife, Geoffrey Barry knocked on the door of Camille Ahmed's flat. Once inside, Jeffrey Barry launched at his victim, repeatedly stabbing him. The attack lasted for around 3/4 of an hour. After mutilating Camille Ahmed's body, Jeffrey Barry left the flat at 2:15 a.m., covered in blood. Using a communal phone, he then called emergency services and told them what he had done. Officers arrived to find Barry still on the phone, although now unarmed as he had left the knife in Camille's room. Two officers, PC Liam Parsons and PC Neil Wesley, were greeted by Barry. Wearing only a pair of trousers, Barry had deep cuts to his hands and was covered in blood. PC Parsons said, "It was almost like he was looking straight through us, like he was possessed, I suppose." Jeffrey Barry momentarily fainted near the ground floor staircase, and so PC Wesley stayed with him while PC Parsons walked up the stairs towards Camille Ahmed's flat. After finding the mutilated body, the control center team were alerted by PC Parsons, who confirmed that someone had died. A pathologist would later tell the court that in the frenzied attack, Camille Ahmed had 25 separate injuries to his face and head. It was 3 fatal stab wounds to his stomach, upper arm and left wrist which caused his death. Mark Williams, a support worker that had been assigned to support Camille Ahmed, was aware of Jeffrey Barry's obsession with Camille. Williams told the court that Jeffrey Barry was prescribed clozapine, which calmed his moods, however had to stop taking it in November 2015 after it began to compromise his immune system. Richard Gaman, a support worker that had been helping the defendant, told the court that Jeffrey Barry thought very highly of himself, often wearing a leather jacket, trilby hat and sunglasses. Barry had told the social worker that he frequently spoke with professors and followed criminal cases. Jeffrey Barry also told Richard Gaman that he visited sex workers. He voiced his opinion, saying that they should pay him, not the other way around. Another support worker addressed the court and told them that both he and his colleagues made efforts to have Jeffrey Barry sectioned, however they were informed there were no beds available. Stephen Loveridge stated, "I had been trying to get him detained for a week to 10 days before he was sectioned. We contacted the crisis team on numerous occasions every day. They would tell us to call the police. The police told us it was a mental health issue." The witness detailed the conversations he had with Barry. He said, "He came into the office and said he thought about going on to the Wells Road and killing a stranger. He wanted to be notorious. It was out of the blue sort of thing. I was shocked by it." The support worker also spoke about the defendant's behaviour before the killing. He said, "He was using massage parlours and masturbating in communal areas, which was seen on CCTV. I reported it to the mental health team and the management." The witness was shocked when he heard that Jeffrey Barry was allowed to return to the shared accommodation on Wells Road, but there was little that could be done. Jenny Civil, who also lived at the flats, was friends with both the victim and the defendant, although Jeffrey Barry wrongly believed that she was sleeping with Camille Ahmed. When she explained to him that she was not, Jeffrey Barry concluded that Camille had raped her. She stressed that her relationship with both men was just platonic. Jenny Civil recounted Jeffrey Barry's perceptions of her. She said, "He had this thought in his head that I was seeing Camille and we were having a relationship and having sex, but I said to him we weren't doing that. He thought it was rape. I have never been in a relationship with Camille. He didn't rape me, and I didn't say that to Jeffrey. It was in his head. He was drinking 2 to 3 days a week. He did say he hated Camille, especially because he was foreign, Pakistani, or Arabia or somewhere." Jeffrey Barry's twin brother also gave testimony and told the court that he collected his brother from Signet Hospital, Cuestoke, and dropped him off at the shared property on Wells Road. He was surprised his brother was released. As the first week of the trial came to an end, Geoffrey Barry had been absent due to ill health. He remained in Broadmoor. The jury would go on to hear from numerous health professionals that either assessed Geoffrey Barry before his release or from the individuals who had been assisting him with his living arrangements when he returned to the shared property. The project manager for the Milestones Trust, Tilly Major, was aware that Barry was arrested on June 13, 2016 and sectioned at the Callington Road Hospital in Bristol. However, neither her or her staff were consulted before his release. They had no idea he had been moved from Callington Road Hospital. Employees at the Milestones Trust charity hoped to register an emergency court order to stop him moving back, though they had little time to do so. The tribunal result was deferred on June 28, 2016, and on July 6, it was agreed he would be released at 4 p.m. that day. The charity was informed of this only a few hours before Geoffrey Barry arrived. Tilly Major knew that Barry had stopped taking his medication at the end of November 2015 and was aware of the threat he posed. She said, "We had no knowledge he had gone from Callington Road Hospital to Signet Hospital, Kewstoke. None of our staff gave evidence to the tribunal, and we didn't know it was happening. It was massively a surprise he came back. Wells Road is not a residential home. It may well have been that there was no staff there at all."
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Consultant forensic psychiatrist Dr. Dave Barker, who attended Geoffrey Barry's mental health tribunal, made a recommendation that the patient remain in care for further assessment, as he was aware of the issues the patient was having. Geoffrey Barry told the panel that he had lapsed due to the alcohol and drugs he had consumed. It was revealed in the trial that the tribunal was not aware that Barry was unable to take his clozapine medication. Geoffrey Barry was treated as a top priority, and although he was exhibiting some bizarre behaviour, a community psychiatric nurse visited him and noted that he appeared to be stable and was highly articulate. Ben Goldstrom, the nurse in question, told the court that he attended the mental health tribunal and also recommended that Jeffrey Barry remained in the care of professionals as a precaution. Barry was released a week later without a care plan in place. The community psychiatric nurse explained to the jury, the tribunal deferred discharge for a week to allow care planning to take place. There was no care plan. I made the assumption erroneously he would be transferred back to an NHS hospital in the meantime. He wasn't. After Jeffrey Barry was released on the evening of July 6th, he went to Charlie's Bar on Wells Road, had one drink there before heading to the Long Bar just under 2 miles away. He spent around 4 hours drinking before returning home at 11:50 p.m. At 1:01 a.m. he was captured on CCTV leaving his flat in just his underwear, and Barry made a phone call in the hallway. He spoke to community psychiatric nurse Joanne Wood. He told the nurse that he had been drinking. He said that he couldn't sleep because he had consumed a litre of rum. At first he was placid, but his voice slowly became louder. After a barrage of sexually explicit language, the nurse made attempts to calm Barry down, asking him what she could do to help. Jeffrey Barry told her he felt like punching a fellow resident that was asleep in another room of the building. The nurse told Jeffrey he couldn't attack someone just because he felt like it. Jeffrey Barry told the nurse he was insane and wasn't responsible for his actions. The call ended at 1:26 a.m. and Barry went back to his room. He emerged at 1:29 a.m. still shirtless, but this time he was wearing some trousers. As he climbed the stairs to the next floor carrying a knife, he headed towards Camille Ahmed's room. Once outside, he banged on the door, although received no answer. He turned and knocked for fellow resident Anthony Brink, although again he was left waiting. Determined, Barry again knocked on Camille Ahmed's bedroom door. This time, he answered. What was said between the men isn't known, but Anthony Brink was awoken and reportedly heard someone say, "Oh no, not you," before a fight broke out. He heard screams for around 15 minutes. At 2:07 a.m. the psychiatric nurse called 101 to report her concerns about Jeffrey Barry. CCTV showed Barry entering Camille's room and leaving 42 minutes later covered in blood. He walked downstairs and from the communal phone rang the police at 2:15 a.m. By the second week of the trial, the court heard from Dr. Roger Thomas, a consultant forensic psychiatrist. After the attack, Jeffrey Barry was interviewed by Dr. Thomas. Barry claimed that the devil had instructed him to kill his housemate. He said that the devil told him, "Camille must die. He is a very bad man." In a recorded interview, Barry also told the doctor that he heard voices from the television and was receiving a telepathic communication that emanated from Camille Ahmed's room. Jeffrey Barry spoke of how he stabbed his housemate through the face. He also detailed mutilating the lower part of Camille's body because he believed that Camille had raped Jenny Civil, who lived at the flat. Barry was of the firm belief that he was in a relationship with Jenny Civil, whom he continually referred to as his girlfriend. He claimed that he was still receiving thoughts from the devil while in custody of police and during the journey to Longlaughton Prison. From the witness box, Dr. Roger Thomas spoke about Jeffrey Barry and said, "My clinical view is he should not have been discharged by the Mental Health Tribunal." The tribunal was unaware that Barry was exhibiting signs of psychotic relapse and no longer taking the prescription drugs that were helping him keep his aggressive behaviour under control. Jeffrey Barry's obsession with Camille was also not disclosed. The project coordinator at the Milestones Trust emailed Avon and Wiltshire Mental Health Partnership NHS Trust in April 2016 and wrote that Barry was extremely paranoid and behaving erratically. Part of their email read, "He is obsessed with everything to do with Camille Ahmed and continues to ask staff about things to do with Kamil Ahmed's comings and goings, bank accounts, and why he is there. The email detailed how Jeffrey Barry was becoming sexually inappropriate. He was informing staff at the charity that he was a sex god. As the trial came to a close and the jury had to make a decision, expert consultant forensic psychiatrists for both the prosecution and the defence provided conflicting testimony as to whether or not Jeffrey Barry was of sound mind when committing the crimes.
For the medical establishment and others, this case has thrown up difficult questions.
10 hours before Jeffrey Barry killed Kamil Ahmed, he'd been here, detained in a secure unit at Cygnet Hospital near Weston-super-Mare. And it was the decision to discharge him that day which, during this trial, was criticised time and again.
A mental health tribunal authorised Barry's release, but jurors heard that was against the advice of the psychiatrist treating him.
Kamil was known to be a vulnerable victim. Barry was known to be a highly dangerous perpetrator. Why was Kamil not protected from Barry? That's the key question.
After a 2-week trial, on October 17th, 2017, a jury unanimously convicted Jeffrey Barry of murder, and he would be sentenced the following month. After the jury's decision had been announced, the judge, Mrs. Justice May, said, "Notwithstanding the verdict, there are issues of illness here. Mr. Barry is in Broadmoor for a reason. He is there because he has a mental illness. It wasn't one that was enough to reduce the offence in this case, but it exists all the same. It is a chronic, enduring mental illness that requires treatment."
For Jeffrey Barry, a paranoid schizophrenic with a history of violent behaviour, his hatred for Kamil Ahmed was well known. Barry said he told mental health support workers of his intentions about the attack and left notes saying he planned to kill Kamil Ahmed.
So they knew, you know, that Barry is dangerous to him. So they should have done something, but I wish they learned.
There'll now be a review to find out whether the authorities could have and should have done more.
Outside Bristol Crown Court, Richard Acone, Detective Chief Inspector for Avon and Somerset Police, addressed the media.
From the outset, Jeffrey Barry admitted he killed Kamil Ahmed. He may have a history of serious mental illness, but at the time he attacked Kamil, he knew exactly what he was doing. He deliberately armed himself with a knife and purposely went to Kamil's flat and brutally attacked him. It is clear in the 999 call he subsequently made to police that he was already thinking of his defence, and the jury rightly recognised he was fully responsible for his actions. The public are now much safer with him off the streets, for he is an exceptionally dangerous man. Kamil's family have been extremely dignified throughout the duration of this case, and I'd particularly like to praise them for the way they have dealt with the harrowing evidence which has been shown in court. Thank you.
A written statement was read by a representative of Kamil Ahmed's family. They said, "We have one question. Why was Kamil not protected by the authorities from this violent racist? We call on all the authorities to give an honest answer to this question without delay, so that Kamil can rest in peace and so that other vulnerable people are protected." Tony Murphy, a lawyer who represented the Ahmed family, told the press there had been a documented history of racist abuse.
The horror of Kamil's death is all the more painful for his family due to the fact that it was avoidable. Kamil lost his life due to a systemic, multi-agency failure to protect him from a known violent criminal.
The lawyer went on to say, "In those circumstances, the apparent and total absence of a plan to protect Kamil upon Barry's discharge is extremely concerning. Had there been a plan, Kamil would be alive today." A campaign group called Stand Against Racism and Inequality, or SARI, spoke with the BBC and told them that more support should have been given to Kamil. Alex Rakes from SARI said, "We're seeing agencies losing more and more resources, more and more frontline resources. Some of our most vulnerable people are even less safe. That means that we, as the voluntary and charitable sector, have got to step up and we've got to do more than we ever have done before to be the eyes and ears of people who are so vulnerable. And Camille was one of those individuals." A day after the verdict, it was announced that a review would be taking place to understand the failings that led to Camille Ahmed's murder. It would range from Jeffrey Barry's release, despite mental health professionals advising the panel that he should remain in care, to Camille's repeated complaints about Jeffrey Barry. Bristol City Council confirmed they would be examining the details of the case. A representative said, "Bristol Safeguarding Adults Board have commissioned a safeguarding adults review, and this will be published in due course. We will respond to any issues raised by the review following its publication and the conclusion of all formal processes." The Avon and Somerset Police reviewed every instance in which contact was made relating to the case and could only find one occasion on which their processes had been incorrectly followed, so did not refer themselves to the Independent Police Complaints Commission. A spokesperson said, "On June 10th, we received a report from a partner agency that Jeffrey Barry had left threatening notes and he was subsequently arrested for making threats to kill and for indecent exposure. Barry was also detained under the Mental Health Act. We did not have the opportunity to finalise this investigation as Barry murdered Mr. Ahmed hours after his release from mental health detention, something we were not notified of." Jeffrey Barry was sentenced on November 10, 2017. During mitigation, David Jeremy QC, defending Barry, argued that his client wasn't the only one to blame for the murder. He said, "The sentence should reflect that the responsibility for Mr. Ahmed's death is shared by others. The Mental Health Tribunal discharged Mr. Barry on the day he killed Mr. Ahmed. They did so on a flawed process in which they were not provided with full information. The tribunal reached a conclusion that Dr. Barker, Dr. Thomas, and Dr. Sanford said they didn't agree with. The defendant should not have been discharged to the address he shared with Mr. Ahmed. It is too simple to pin responsibility to him in the sentence you will pass for the death of Mr. Ahmed. Jeffrey Barry, as well as Mr. Ahmed, is a victim of a flawed decision to discharge him from hospital on the day he went home to murder Mr. Ahmed." A Kurdish interpreter read an impact statement prepared by Camille Ahmed's younger brother Kamaran. It read, "I saw with my own eyes the unspeakable crime visited on his gentle body. What I saw that day will remain in my mind forever. Our family had so many questions for which I did not have answers. They do not understand how something so monstrous could happen in a civilized place like Bristol, a place where Camille had sought sanctuary." The statement continued, "Camille will always have a special place in our hearts. He was our loving, lovely brother, cousin, and uncle. Losing him at just 48 years of age would have always been painful. Losing him in such savage circumstances is unbearable. Camille sought refuge in this country and was met with great compassion from many people who helped him build the life here. We wish Camille had been protected against this terrible violence. Our family believes in love, not hate. It's important to us that other vulnerable people are now protected from this man so other lives are not lost and so other families do not have to suffer this unimaginable pain. We have lost someone who we can never replace. Camille will never be forgotten."
This morning, as she sentenced him to life in prison, Mrs. Justice May said, "In hindsight, the decision to discharge Mr. Barry from hospital is nothing short of calamitous, given what happened hours later." Turning to Mr. Barry, she continued, "On the jury's verdict, notwithstanding, you were suffering from a chronic mental illness. You were not in such a grip of illness that you did not know what you were doing."
Jeffrey Barry was sentenced to life in prison and would have to serve a minimum of 23 years before he would be considered for parole. A few years later, on June 21st, 2018, the findings of the Serious Case Review Report by the Bristol Safeguarding Adults Board were released. It concluded Camille's murder was racially motivated. There were catastrophic failings of mental health services, and it required a complete revision to the way risk assessments are completed. The report noted that Jeffrey Barry was transferred from NHS Callington Road Psychiatric Hospital to privately run Signet Hospital in Weston-super-Mare due to a shortage of beds. When he arrived, Barry contested his requirement to be there, demanding a hearing in front of an independent panel. His NHS care team had only 24 hours to explain why he should stay there. Staff at Signet Hospital were unable to contest his application as they did not have his full medical history or any information on the threats he had made to kill Camille Ahmed. Due to the lack of detail in some instances, the panel had to rely on Jeffrey Barry's memory. The care coordinator for Jeffrey Barry had assumed the patient would be transferred back to Callington Road Psychiatric Hospital before a release was considered. Workers at Qstoke had attempted to contact the care coordinator via email and fax, however received no response. Staff at the Milestones Trust tried in vain to prevent him coming back to the shared property on Wells Road by contacting a court judge, but Barry was allowed to return as the earliest the injunction could be heard was July 7th, the following day. Barry went out drinking, and later that night, while no staff were at the property, he murdered Camille Ahmed. Part of the Serious Case Review Report, in which Jeffrey Barry is referred to as Mr. X, read, "The discharge from hospital back to Milestones Trust was seen by them as something of a fait accompli. They were given virtually no warning of the impending discharge and thus were unable to take steps to prevent Mr. X returning to his flat. The failure of any effective discharge planning process meant that Mr. X was discharged from hospital after 23 days with no meaningful handover between the hospital and those agencies providing support in the community. Even fundamental details such as changes to his medication were not discussed, and the crisis of his accommodation was not properly understood by the hospital." It summarised that Camille Ahmed's murder was foreseeable and preventable. The 43-page report included 16 recommendations which all the agencies involved in Camille's care accepted. Camille's brother spoke with the press about the review findings and said, "This report confirms our worst fears that Camille's life could have been saved if just one of the organisations involved had protected him from the racism that ended his life. The space this leaves in our lives can never be filled, yet not one of the organisations involved has offered us an apology since we lost our wonderful brother, uncle, cousin and friend. We call on each of these organisations to apologise and to sit down with us to answer our questions." In response to the Bristol Safeguarding Review, the Disabled People Against Cuts wrote, "Despite reference to systematic issues, the report still attempts to shift the blame from the agencies to the individual. The report contains 15 references to Camille and other disabled people as vulnerable. All humans are vulnerable. People become more vulnerable if barriers are faced getting their rights met. Camille was failed by multiple agencies. He died because insufficient action was taken to prevent someone intent on killing him. This is not a sign of Camille's vulnerability, but of agency failures." Marjorie Wallace, the chief executive of mental health charity SANE, spoke to the BBC about the murder and said Jeffrey Barry should never have been released to his sheltered housing. She described the case as a failure of psychiatric services, though recognised the amount of pressure the system was under. She said, "The case beggars belief. and described it as a catastrophic litany of errors and blunders. So where are we now? On June 29th, 2018, a mural that honours the people that had been failed by authorities was unveiled at the headquarters of Bristol City Council. The mural, painted in part by Camille back in 2012, was exhibited at the Bristol Refugee Festival. Before the gathering, a spokesperson said, "Our event is in honour of Camille Ahmed, a disabled Kurdish man who came to Britain seeking sanctuary. Camille never gave up his loving nature and sense of justice, despite the horrific experiences he had encountered." In 2012, Camille had helped paint the mural because he wanted people to understand his experiences and what it was like for disabled asylum seekers in Britain. He painted himself with his head in his hands and a chain and padlock around his neck. The mural was taken to the Houses of Parliament and a copy was installed in Bristol City Hall in his honour. Thank you for listening and special thanks to our Patreon supporters. For more information, please visit theywalkamonguspodcast.com. To keep up to date with news on the podcast, you can follow us on our social media accounts. We're on Facebook and Instagram under They Walk Among Us Podcast, or you can follow us on Twitter at @TWAU_podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.